Yes, I was looking at... I find the essays a little difficult to mark because one is the way that they're written. I really have to work hard to sort of... one, there can sometimes for each essay there can be 4 to 10 times the amount of words that really need to be there. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, so it's about 600.
Generally, we try to do 900 to 1,000 words per unit, right? Which means that if there are 4 questions, you'll do about 250 words on an average per question. If there are 3 questions, you do about 330 words. Okay. Now, I've got an essay before me. I won't mention any names. I see 688 words. Now, that's for everything?
Yeah, because it was 3 questions, I was thinking 3 questions, 200 each. Just
right.
Put it over. So it's, they said 10% you're allowed to go over.
So, you're saying that the total is...
The total, yeah. I didn't take the questions. I take questions out, just
the
answer.
So here we're nearly about 300 under. Would that be right?
Yeah,
we're trying to get to 1,000.
1,000, yeah. I could easily do 1,000.
Yeah.
I just try to make it short.
Okay. All right. So when we have a word count, there's 2 things we can do wrong. What is that? If we have a word count that we're sticking to...
Are you counting the words of the total or...?
Well, we can either have too many or too little.
Ah,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Alright?
So I'm too little this time.
Yeah, so, you know, and this is what we want to look at here today, a little bit about essay writing, because I think it's a little bit difficult for... a lot of the essays that I've seen, nearly all of them, there's very few that I look at and I think, well, gee, that was really well written. Mm-hmm. Within the word count, found the points and got some, you know, some good comments related to the subject. So let's just write some things on the board. Okay, so I have some. We won't worry about it too much. What about the one behind? Let's do the one behind that looks clean. Okay, so first of all, we really do want to try and stick to the word count as close as possible. Now, why is that? Why, you know, give me some reasons why we don't want to write too much. Say if we double or even triple the word count. You can go off track, yeah.
For that kind of question, if there is a word count for any question, it means that the most relevant point can be brought, can be written in those many.
Exactly, exactly.
So
yeah.
More than that.
That's right. That's it. We have a word count because that's all that's required. And if there's too much, you're doing work that you don't need to do. It means that you're either hoping that somewhere within all the writing that you've done that you've actually got the point in that, you know, you weren't sure what you're looking for, but if you just keep writing, there's somewhere you've got to be something close. So one, it's a sign to me that the person's not quite sure. Two, you know,
to be uniform, so 600
Well, it's a very good, it's very interesting. You know, if you say something to someone, and if you speak to them for half an hour on one point, they may remember one or two sentences of what you said. So you may as well just say those one or two sentences. You know, if you don't say enough, of course you haven't quite made your point. So the word count is important because it's actually something that's required. You know, one may think that, you know, well, we shouldn't think that it doesn't matter if I do way over or way under. That means that we don't understand the requirements of what we're looking for. And it does reflect, one, our understanding of the question can be doubtful. And two, it does reflect our ability to communicate to others in an adequate way that, you know, if we have found the answer. So one thing, if we found the answer, that's good, personally, but we are trying to, you know, bhakti vaibhavis, you want to actually be people who are then spreading that knowledge effectively, you know, to others and teaching skills and what have you. Now, this is a skill in itself, to be able to, you know, see what is required, stick to that, and then, you know, very concisely, effectively communicate some very valuable piece of information that's not shrouded by other unnecessary things. That's the, you know, if you say, if you've got the actual point, and then you write a whole lot of other things which may be wonderful, but they can actually hide the value of the real significant point that you've got.
Yeah.
You know? So, and then of course if you don't say enough, then it doesn't bring the value of that point to light enough. So it really is required to stick to the, you know, and there are many other, you know, you could look at it for many different reasons, but the word count is actually very important. And you should really try to stick to it. Now, a little over, a little under, you know, if you're reading an essay, if I'm reading an essay, and you can see that a person's a little over, but they're just following such a really important statement, and you can see, yes, they needed to go that extra little bit, that's fine. Or, if they've stated something so concisely and wonderfully, and it's just slightly under, that's also okay.
So we are using this board?
Yeah, is that right? You want that one?
Whichever.
Yeah, you, if you take that back one. Yeah. Alright. Okay. Let's have a look at a question. Let's look at Unit 5. Would anyone like to choose one of the questions that we could look at as an example? Now, I take it you always bring your student books with you when you come? Yeah, it's good, it's important. Okay, anyone like to choose one of the... as a sample we can have a look at one of these questions. So we've got
2B.
What's that?
2B.
Okay. So this is a personal application question. Preaching application. Yep. Describe the connection between Brahminical culture and cow protection. How is this relevant for ISKCON? We're looking at verses 16:4 and 16:18. Yeah. Okay, unit 5. We're looking at question 2, which is preaching application, and we want to describe the connection between Brahminical culture and cow protection. Right, now, what would be one of the first things we'd want to do?
Explain what Brahminical culture and cow protection.
Maybe why is it important, each one separately.
And then give a connection between.
Yeah, and how would you go about explaining that connection? What's that?
Because that's what the main question is. See, we also have what I usually do is have the introduction.
Yes.
Just maybe 4 or 5 lines of introduction, in which we'll specify, okay, what is Brahminical culture and what do we mean by cow protection.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on to describe the main part, saying that Brahminical culture depends on, from what I understand, that it depends on cow protection, and cow protection in return depends on if there is a Brahminical culture, will there be only some cow protection? So, and then you go on to describe in detail how Brahmanas will need milk and
cow protection. Okay, so where are you deriving this information from?
From this very slogan that you mentioned here.
Okay, so one of the first things we do is we look at the reference. Right? Okay? So. You know, we want to study the reference. Study the reference means that verse 16:4 and 16:8 now, if we look at it, we may say that 16:4 and 16:18. We see that verse 16:4, you know, basically that verse takes up a whole page. But it doesn't look like the entire purport is about this topic. So we'd want to first select relevant points from that and exclude others which are interesting but not necessarily part of our discussion. So, and then if we look at verse 18, we can see that, you know, it's about the same. There's about a page. Whereas, you know, in this one, there appears to be more on this actual point. Right. So, with these two, we want to really look at the references we read the whole thing, but the most important thing we want to look at is a statement that shows what? A statement related to the question, which means that a statement that actually, you know, does describe a connection between Brahminical culture and cow protection.
I think that line in the purport to 18 is that line that says the bull and the cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by spreading the Brahminical culture. and the topic of section on cultural affairs. That may indicate that cross section is dependent on grammatical culture.
Yes. That's the key sentence. Alright? So there's a whole page there, but actually the key sentence is in the purport. Sometimes it may be in the translation, sometimes it's in the purport. Quite often they're in Prabhupada's purports. The bull and the cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by spreading of Brahminical culture as the topmost perfection of all cultural affairs. So that definitely is a key statement showing the connection between which is related to, you know, between Brahminical culture and cow protection. He uses the word, the bull and the cow can be protected. You know, he's not talking about raising them or feeding habits or what, you know, protection. For the good of all humanity, human society, simply by spreading Brahminical culture as the topmost perfection of cultural affairs. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yep?
Can we copy the same wordings from the purport?
Yes. You can literally, you know, especially, let's count how many words there is in there. In that sentence. How many?
32
words in the purport to Canto 1, Chapter 16, verse number 18. Now what about in verse 4 of the 16th chapter? What did we find there? Okay. Human civilization means to advance the cause of Brahminical culture and to maintain it. And to maintain it, cow protection is essential. Okay. Fourth verse. If we go a little further, Prabhupada says, Brahminical culture can advance only when man is educated to develop the quality of goodness, and for this there is a prime necessity of food prepared with milk, fruits and grains. So here it's the same statement with an explanation of why, which is probably more important. It is making the same statement. The only difference is that it actually gives you the details of how it works practically. Because a man is educated to develop the quality of goodness, and for this there is prime necessity of food prepared with milk, fruits and grains, foods and goodness. Certainly both those sentences are important. If you're going to, you know, quote Prabhupada's purports, you really want to take the sentence which all other sentences, you know, the essence of them is in that, you know. So for a quote, you'd probably choose that one. You could choose the other one, it's not incorrect. This one is actually a better because it is the same statement with more detail. So selecting, you know, the... And someone do a word count on that one sentence, you know, beginning that Brahminical cult. What's that?
29.
You know, so there we've got. So we're going to answer in this total, we've got 1, 2, 3 questions. We're looking about 350 words. Right? What do you notice about the two statements?
Because in one, it tells us that the Brahmanika culture is dependent on milk, which means on
the cows and bulls, yeah.
And the other one identifies the cows and bulls are protected by society, which is what the Brahmanika culture is.
Yeah. So these verses are giving an interdependence.
Yeah.
So they're actually related. So, I mean, you know, that should be a statement in our essay. Right. But if we're going to describe the connection between Brahminical culture and cow protection, one of our sentences should sum up that there's an interdependence. And we could say something like, so who would like to offer? Who would like to offer a statement that describes Brahminical culture and cow protection, the relationship has been interdependent.
If I understood what I had read for you, for the Brahminical culture to sustain and progress, it depends mainly on the consumption of milk, good milk, grains and everything, which are obtained again from the cow.
Yeah.
So if the cow protection is not there, the Brahminical culture may not be continuing for a long time.
Is that one sentence? Did you put a comma in there somewhere? Okay. You see the problem there? There's a lot of information. We have to sort of. So, as you say, Vidilakshana was saying an introduction. So, we sort of move. We want this to be the main point. Because this is the answer to the question. It has to stand out so we can introduce ourselves to making this main point. You see, Prabhupada does it in his purports. You may say that cow protection and Brahminical culture are interdependent. It's a sentence, full stop. Very clear statement. It appears to be, you know, just very simple, but it's a sentence that actually, you know, does not come into the minds of, you know, the majority of people in the world. But it's actually a very important sentence. Brahminical culture and cow protection are mutually interdependent. So that can be a sentence as an introduction. Somewhere in the introduction. Well, you can do it in the conclusion if you like, yeah. Either way, but it's probably an important sentence to make somewhere, since we've, you know, quite clearly it's one of the first things we should see looking at our statements. So, yes, it can be in the introduction, but I think it's just a simple sentence that should be there. It's a very clear statement. If that statement is in a sentence which is too long, or, you know, goes to other places, you may miss it as an important statement in itself. There are a lot of different ways to say that one sentence, but according to one's, you know, poetic ability, but to state some concise truths need to be there. All right, so we've got a couple of sentences here. We've got another, you know, important sentence here, which will either be in the conclusion or the introduction, which is important that, you know, we sort of want to introduce, you know, our audience. you know, into the, work our way into the answer. We want to, you know, sort of present the relevant information. What else do we want to do in our... We want to conclude. But what else needs to be done there? What's not in the purpose that needs to come from us?
Preaching
application. All right. Add a little bit of something as individual preachers, and according to our own individual realization. So, so let's first define when we say preaching application, what do we actually mean? You know, what are we trying to do with that? You know, we've got some information. We want to present that information so that it's that information is presented and is very nicely bundled for a preaching application. What does that mean?
Are we just trying to encourage Brahminical culture and encourage congregation to those we're preaching to?
Yes, yeah, we're trying to convince others, basically. You know, personal application, of course, means that, you know, we're taking something and we want to apply it in our own lives. Here, we want this information to be, we want others to be convinced about it. Alright, so, preaching application, let's convince, if you go out the street, of course, and you know, you say to people, you know, you're all suffering in the material world because there's no, cow protection and, Brahminical culture. People just look at you and say, what? You know, how does that relate to anything? So preaching application means that you say something on this subject, and they immediately think, aha, you know, I can relate to what you have said. That's a very good point. I can, you know. So, you know, you've got to relate to others.
So show them how it will be beneficial to them in today's modern day world.
Yeah,
and how
yeah.
It can have environmental
benefits, social benefits. Yes, yeah, yeah, it can. Yeah, 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 that's right. So, you know, that's right. So there's a whole range of things there that, you know, others may personally benefit from your convincing preaching argument. So, you know, that's others. Society as a whole may flourish and benefit. The environment or the planet all of the above. You know, the cows may benefit, the Brahmins. But, you know, there's This is where, of course, you know, if there are 15-20 students and you've only got 350 words, you present something and it's going to be, you know, you can't get all of these into that 350 words, which means you're going to select something that you can put in there on this subject, and then, you know, each one of you will, you know, find something that, you know, a good example or a convincing argument that, you know, when you write it, it's the sort of thing that if someone reads what you have said, they will think, this makes sense. Not, oh, you know, here's some fanatical Hare Krishna saying something that just doesn't make sense, you know, it's like, you know. You're saying something, and a reader who reads that, say you put an article in one of the local newspapers says, oh, you're a Hare Krishna, can you every week comment on, you know, a social issue? This is the sort of thing you'd be doing. You'd be relating all the goings on in the world, somehow convincing people that the solution is a Vedic process. So let's have some examples of we've got an introduction you can do, the relevant information we've got. So on any of these different levels,
even for someone like me who's been sort of brought up in a devotee family, it took a while for me to accept it. So could you say that the basic response main duty is to spread the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, because then one automatically is the process of devotion so that he can accept these things?
Yeah, well, look, it would depend on who you were talking to, you know, over those years that you were being convinced, whether someone, one of the things that practically everyone said about Prabhupada was that when they asked him a question or when he spoke, they just felt, yeah, that is so relevant, you know. It was just like all the stuff that was going on in their head and their life, and what he said just, you know, hit it. Oh, that was just, you know, it was just something about what he said. It could be just such an unusual, but he had that ability, you know, because he was a lifelong preacher who cultivated. You know, Prabhupada used to go to the, you know, the little tea shops and, you know, just anyone along the streets and the businesses, and, you know, he was a book distributor with his own BTGs, and he just practiced preaching. You know, you can imagine how many people, you know, knockbacks that Prabhupada got, thousands and thousands, but, you know, he just preach. You see his letters and articles, everything that was going on, Prabhupada wrote something about it, and, you know, like that. So it was practice. And, you know, when he came to the West, he was a mature, you know, preacher, and, you know, the most green people could ask him a question and, you know, he could just, you know, nail that answer. He was, you know. So this is what we're doing here. You know, it is developing that ability that someone will ask you a question and you give such a nice answer that they're convinced. They may not take the Krishna consciousness out of stubborn, you know, desire to, but they know I was defeated, you know, and I was happily defeated, you know, and I respect that person. It was a very good, you know. Just like Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was defeated. He presented to his spiritual master when he first met him, oh, we need independence, you know. How can we, you know, who will listen to the message of India if we don't have independence? Ah, this message is too important away, you know, like this. And Prabhupada was happily defeated. He remembered that. Yes, I was defeated. I was very happy about that. He didn't join. It was another 10 or 11 years before it actually came along. But he was happily defeated. So, you know, that's what we want to be able to do. People will, you know, they may not immediately take it up, but they acknowledge, yes, that makes sense. I acknowledge that. I might be too fallen to do anything about it, but you're actually right. That's what we want to do. So let's generate this brainstorm a little bit here. Let's go back to our statements just to, you know, get something going in our brain. We've got these two statements: the bull and the cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by spreading Brahminical culture as the topmost perfection of cultural affairs. Alright, so there, if we can present Brahminical culture in a convincing way. What can we say about Brahminical culture? You know, that it can be from the purport there, it can be some of the Srila Prabhupada's lecture, but, you know, even just from your own realizations, what's good about Brahminical culture that you think people in society will respect and admire or, you know, be attracted to?
Develop some higher qualities. Like, one of them is, which itself already encompasses that cult perfection.
Brahminical culture, people who you know, personally cultivate systematically good qualities. Yeah, they may argue a little bit about the regular principles and what have you, but I think, you know, if you say that, you know, Brahminical culture means a class of people who develop, you know, the highest human qualities, knowledge,
yeah,
you know, control of the mind and the senses, but that may not necessarily go into the details of what that control of the mind and senses is. That can, you know, almost sometimes be anti-productive. You know, you can say things that attract them without sort of scaring someone off. Yeah, but peaceful. Brahman is a peaceful. You know. Yes. Yep. Yep. So, okay. So here's a good one that is in the purport that, so we're talking about Brahminical culture means that we're saying that by maintaining, that's Prabhupada's exact word, spreading of Brahminical culture. So by spreading of Brahminical culture, so another way to put that, or to explain that sentence a little bit more, is that we want to educate and train a class of people, you know, with a high standard of morals that can create peace and prosperity in society. You know, a high standard of morals and knowledge. You know, basically that's what Brahminical culture is. Who are able to, you know, set a nice standard for society and also guide society. So by to talk about peacefulness, training, educating people, some to the level of brahmanas, people who are peaceful, then how does everyone benefit by if you have a class of people who are say guiding society, setting the highest standard for society? You know, what are some of the practical outcomes of that? So it reduces conflict because they're not motivated, you know, personally, but, you know. So how do you put that into a sentence? Reduce conflict. They, you know. They reduce conflict. Yeah, they reduce, so, you know, it's sort of the opposite of this, isn't it? They reduce conflict and promote peace in society, right? Okay, this is a good point in that they do promote law and order, right? And they promote, an honest society, really honest, and moral or principled. There's a lot of different words. Citizens. Don't have the propensity for violence or crime. So this is a preaching application. It is beneficial for society. We see it's also beneficial for the individuals. Yeah. If it's, you know, if you've got a definite point that is, you know, something that people want an end to crime, they want an end to the violence, they want an end to social unrest. That's a really, you know, if someone's actually got a, a good point to it. And there are examples that really highlight that point. Yes, and it, you know, it's it is good. It can be used. Yes, so you can then, you know, take something from the Bhagavad Gita or another scripture, an example, or it can be a historical example. You know, that sometimes people relate to historical personalities that really just highlight the point that you just made there. That's right, yeah. So, you know, here, of course, we know that there's a problem that people, the citizens become dishonest and violent, and it's increasing. The laws, we would say, when you create laws, you do your legislation is not working. Right? Legislation is not fixing this problem. People want it fixed. Here, we're saying you should promote Brahminical culture because it actually fixes the problem that legislation can't. It how does that? Because it actually you actually educate and train a class of people from birth to be have good qualities, to be peaceful, to be non-violent, you know, to be knowledgeable, to be in the mode of goodness, in other words, and their example and their guidance to others will automatically promote others to be honest, principled, peaceful, non-violent as well. But you can't just, without the education and the training, it won't happen just by legislation. The qualities have to be changed. And that, the quality of the citizens has to be changed, and that quality comes from education and training, not just through legislation. So, to educate and train them, you need a class of people who have those qualities and who have that knowledge, who are practicing what they're teaching others. So this is, you know, a very strong preaching argument that yes, we should promote Brahminical culture, and if we do that, how do cows benefit? Cows benefit because such non-violent people, you know, are actually compassionate to all living entities. Now, there you can bring in an example of Saint, is it Saint Francis of Assisi? Is it Saint Francis who used to say that, you know, flower, you know, the tree is my brother, and you know, the cow is my sister. You know, was it Saint Francis? Yeah, I think yeah, and you know when. When they asked Prabhupada, the actual priest asked what they thought about that, Prabhupada said, ah, that is a true sadhu, a true saint, like that. So there's an example of, you know, in modern history that a lot of people know or relate to. I think it's Saint Francis or something like that. It's not Xavier. It's in one of his lectures when he came to Melbourne, where he actually went to the monastery of the monks, particular friars somewhere, and you'll see right at the end of the lecture where they ask him questions, you'll see any questions there. Yes.
So, and actually she was saying, even though she was helping the poor, she was saying that the rich are also in need of help as much as the poor, but I can't help the rich, at least I can help the poor.
Mm. Yes. So examples like that, which are particularly related to the point, you know, can be used. Or they can be, as you say, you know, they may not relate to the use here or like that. But you may put in certain people that they can relate to, or certain issues from current personalities. But here is a strong point that people do, you know, people are attracted. They're just fed up with the crime, the violence, you know, what to do. But legislation won't work, but you promote Brahminical culture. That means just a class of people who are trained, you know, throughout their life to develop the highest qualities of morals and principles and knowledge and control of the mind and senses, who are then qualified to guide others and to set a nice example. And when you have some section of society who's qualified to guide others, then automatically you'll find that the, you know, average, the general mass of people will follow that standard, and by training the culture, you know, they will actually become more honest, principled, non-violent, what have you. By that, of course, you know, so one is you're actually, they're presenting Brahminical culture in a way that, yes, a lot of people say that, you know, that makes sense. And then you relate it back to the cows, that then all, you know, all living entities will, you know, benefit, because, you know, they'll be, you know, people who are knowledge and, you know, well cultured, not violent to any creature. Especially innocent animals like cows, who are actually so valuable. So then you come to the next, you know, then it helps you to then, so there you've shown, one, how cows benefit, along with everyone else, in a way that they want to, they like that. Because there's something in it for them. You know, what's in it for them? Their society gets fixed. What's in it for us? The cows get looked after. So, but then their question is, well, you know, who cares about the cows? But then we want to say, ah, but cows are essential. If you want that, well, you've got to look after the cows particularly. Otherwise, how can you have the Brahminical culture? You can't have the hen without the, you can't have the, you know, people want to have the back part of the hen because it lays the eggs, and not the top half because you have to feed it. Well, let's before we even let them get an argument in, let's shoot off a few rounds of our own. So let's say something about the cows, right? What do we look back to our statement here? We see that Prabhupada is making this point that Brahminical culture can advance only when man is educated to develop the quality of goodness, and for this there is a prime necessity of food prepared with milk, fruits and nuts and grains. Now, there is another statement in the 18th verse of the 16th chapter where Prabhupada says, the bull helps production of grains in the agricultural field, and the cow delivers milk, the miracle of aggregate food values. Right? The human society therefore maintains these two important animals very carefully so they can wander everywhere in cheerfulness. Okay, so there are two statements there. Can you see that one in verse number 18? The bull helps production of grains. Do you want to count those words? So we've got about 85 words, just, you know, with a couple of quotes that, you know, probably quite important to go in there, some of those significant quotes like that, that were part of it. So here, it's a preaching application. We want to show the interdependence we prove that spreading Brahminical culture is a good thing. Now we want to show, you know, and by that all living entities, including cows, but now we want to show how cows in particular of all living entities are very important for Brahminical culture. So, you know, it is in there, but we want to present it in such a way that, you know, so what was your argument again? Or, you know, arguing on behalf of the Indian Republic? Yeah, no, there's a lot of people who stay. There's a lot of people who don't have milk. So should we kill the cow? You can't have milk, let's go and kill the cow. how many people in this world can drink cow's milk? Probably the vast majority? Okay. So, you know, there are a few people who have, the other thing is the health issue that you have, is it created by the cow's milk, or is it created by modern society creating such a problem with your metabolism that you can't have a harmless substance like cow's milk?
So the milk is not milk, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, alright. So, what we want to do is...
they also said that cows and milk has been harmful, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, if you watch the news, it depends which week you watch. No. They change. You watch, I think last week, an example for you. So, next week it'll be good for you. Yeah. For thousands and thousands of years, people have had milk. The majority of people have had milk. In our modern civilization, in the last 50 or 80 years, people are having difficulty because of the way we live today. There's not necessarily a problem with the natural way the world is, but our modern society is creating such a situation where we can't even, you know, our body can't adjust to natural things like... So, yeah, and here's something to prove that, right? People can't even walk in the sun. The sun used to be the most beneficial, helpful thing. Are we going to blame the sun because we... No. We have done something that we can't walk in the sun, which is normally healthy. We've done something, we can't swim in the water. We've done something, we can't swim in the milk. And we're blaming the water, blaming the sun, blaming the milk. So we want to, you know, present the natural thing, you know, the way things always have been and the way things should be when things return to normal. And that is that, you know, products like vegetables, fruits, grains, and milk products, which it is a miracle, you know, has always been considered a miracle. They used to give it to the children, you know, a free bottle of milk, you know, to all the children. In some places in the world, they still do that. When I was a kid, my brother and I used to get up before the sun. We used to follow the milkman round, who used to go around on a horse and a cart. I'm not that old, but that, you know, you go around on a horse and a cart. We used to have a baker, right? The baker used to come. He'd pull up his funny little van. He'd have a cane basket, and he knock on your door. In those days, the doors were open. Front, back, all your windows. No one shut the door anywhere. You know, this is in Broadmeadow. You walk in, you poke your head in the door, you go, ooh-loo, like this. That was his call. You know, oh, there's a baker's there. And he, you know, drop off his couple of things. You know, or if we weren't there, he'd just walk in, put it on the bench, go out, and leave. You know, no. But the milkman used to go around. We used to, my brother and I, get a bottle of chocolate syrup, and we'd follow the milkman around. He'd drop off two bottles of milk, and you know they used to be the actual bottles with the silver top, and we'd wait till he'd gone up, and we'd take the top off, drink a bit, fill it up with chocolate syrup, you know, it's about that much, shake it up, drink the whole bottle, so we drink, you know, a bottle each. Oh, like this, you know, and we go to the next house, you know, until the whole bottle of chocolate milk, you know, chocolate syrup was gone, and you know, and then we just lie in the back, it's just, oh, you know, and the sun would be coming up, you know, and like people would start to come out for the milk, so we'd head home, you know, yeah. Ah, so, you know. Is it?
Now we know why
they can't open
the doors.
Well, I'll tell you, if we didn't get to it, the magpies did. Yeah, because the magpies, they used to, you know, they'd come out of the, we actually had trees in the streets in those days, big gum trees, they'd actually, you know, fly down and they'd poke a little hole in the silver top and they'd drink it. And they used to do quite a few, yeah. So, you know, we were just getting in before the magpies. But, you know, milk has always been, you know, a part of growing up for children, you know. There's something wrong now. It's not the problem with milk.
Milk will help you to develop
the fine tissues in your brain. Yes. So, you know, let's summarize that. Let's put that into a point. Okay, before we get to milk, which people may have arguments against, let's present the argument that Brahmanas, you know, are educated and trained to live life in the mode of goodness, you know, with knowledge and control of the senses and, you know, by principles. That means that everything they do is associated with the mode of goodness. The work they do, the foods they eat, places they, you know, go to, everything is associated with goodness. So they don't do things which are associated with those foods that may generate, you know, agitate the senses of the mind, things like that. So one is, we say, we want to maintain Brahminical culture. For Brahminical culture, it's important proper foods to maintain Brahminical culture, there must be a proper diet of foods in the mode of goodness that don't agitate the senses and the mind, basically. You know, and that promote a healthy, wholesome lifestyle. Right? So that's, you know, no one will argue with that. And, you know, if we then say that the something that people do like these days are things that are natural, they would say that the natural the natural way that that is achieved is, you know, through milk, grains, fruits. You know, it is a non-violent source of foods, and very wholesome. Traditionally, for thousands of years, these products have been known to be, you know, the source of the highest sort of nutritional value, and non-agitating to the mind senses. So, you know, it can be just summed up like that, generally.
Can you believe that actually I got one of the arguments from my boss that, how come you are milking the cows? That also hurt them.
Yeah.
the pain of looking at myself? What kind of pain do you call it? No, there's no, if you pull too hard or you put these machines. I said, yeah. Painful maybe if you put machines.
They actually suffer if you don't milk them.
Yeah, I remember that.
They get like a mastitis or something
so
like that.
That argument that you told me last week about putting the limit.
Discrimination.
Discrimination.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
You got it? Yeah. That can go in here somewhere. But, so, you know, we can actually present the statement that they'll agree with, and then later add milk as part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a sales pitch. You know, we used to do this selling, when you're selling something, painting. You just get them to say yes. You know, love to pay. Yeah. Love your house. Yeah. You've done this yourself. Yeah. How's your kid? It looks like a smart little kid. Yeah. Can I buy this painting? Yeah. As a sort of a sales, so you get enough yeses in, but you know, you can sneak the milk down the bottom. Okay. So, how about as a group? Let's write something. Alright, shall we finish it off? We'll just write a paragraph, 350 words. That, do we have a cloth? What do you use? Turn the page, okay. Okay, so we've got about 85 words here in our statements. You know, there can be a little introduction. Alright, here's our relevant information. We've looked at, in our preaching, application, we need to preach about actually cows and Brahminical culture, you know, because we can't really present either one to the general public these days without some little, you know, convincing statements. And if we do that, you know, the essay is not very, you know, it doesn't have a lot of value, you know. But if you know, if we don't present some convincing arguments for Brahminical culture and cow protection, we're not really doing a preaching application. We're just repeating Prabhupada's purport, trying to fill up the quota of words. So describe the connection between Brahminical culture and cow protection. How is this relevant for us? How is that relevant for us? ISKCON has taken the responsibility to develop Brahminical culture. One of its prime goals, missions. Who else is doing that? I think Prabhupada even mentioned, in his time, that in India, you know, they pay people, you know, to try and become Brahmins, you know, because no one's interested to become a Brahmin. Everyone wants to become IT or, you know, this and that. But, you know, no one wants to become a Brahmin. So, and even if they pay them, you know, it still, it doesn't, you know, defeat the purpose, because the whole Brahminical culture is based upon, you know, gaining knowledge, you know, for the as a matter of becoming a little detached from, you know, gains, to gains, and then teaching others to become a little bit detached. So if they'll only do it if there's a gain, then, you know, where's the education? From the very beginning, you're teaching them a bad habit. You're paying them to do something they shouldn't do, and then telling them in the actual training that don't ever do this, but we'll pay you so that you will do it. What's the value? There's no value. But you know, who's training Brahmanas? You know, how many universities in the educational systems? You know, no one's doing it. So, you know, ISKCON really how's it relevant for ISKCON? You know, throughout the world, practically only ISKCON is spreading Brahminical culture. Very relevant for ISKCON. And if ISKCON doesn't take it seriously, basically, Brahminical culture will disappear, you know, within days, very, very quickly.
But the other thing is, ISKCON has worked with the throughout the world, which is protecting the culture.
Yes.
Only, I think ISKCON has worked like that.
Cow protection as well.
No one is.
That's right. It's unique. It's unique.
Some Sampradaya may have Goshala or something, but they're very limited to one area, one.
Another point also is that ISKCON, in order to really spread Brahminical culture, has to make sure that their protection of cows is also up to the standard that allows Brahminical culture to flourish. Yes. So, you know, for ISKCON, we need to hand in hand, you know, make sure that we're spreading Brahminical culture and protecting cows. Hand in hand, we can't just do one. So it's important for us to understand that independence, and it's important for us to, you know, continue that work, since, you know, really throughout the world we're the only ones doing it on a significant basis. Shall we? Let's divide into two groups. And you want to do two groups or one group? What do you want to do? One? Yep. All come this way. They got the flower. Come over towards the flower girls. Maybe just pull this table up here. Or even just pull some chairs up in front of the over here. So if you a couple up here. So what do you want to do? No, what we're going to do is, it's an exercise. We want to come up with an essay in about 350 words, and pretty much what we have done here today, if you can then turn that into a 350 word essay, an introduction, an information, preaching, conclusion, like that. In essence, our conclusion is almost part of that. How is this relevant for ISKCON, isn't it? You know, yeah. Like that. So come together. Yeah. All right. Okay. Turn this off. Take it off hold, do we? Or we got to pause it. We just want to pause it.
I guess if we press it.
Do you need to take it off hold, do we?
Hold, switch.
Or is it this one?
Never saw this before. I think it's not recording now. No, still on.
Why are the bands? This must be dragging. This is done. Hold that.
Okay.
So I've taken it off. I would say